let's go ahead and let's start.
I'd like to introduce some new staff members.
Okay, all right, okay. I'll do that up front. Welcome to post-council meeting. It's the 24th of March, and it's the attendant time at 1 o'clock to start. Couple of business items here. Christine Morin is asked not to attend today, to be excused, and we will do that. And also turn a few seconds over to Director Stevenson for some staff introduction.
Thank you. I'd just like to introduce some new staff members.
Julie Gomez, she wasn't here last December. I want to make sure all of you are put a name with a face, but she replaced Shauna McLeod. And then Jacqueline Moore, if you can stand up. She came to us from Draper Police Department and is one of our new investigators. And even though I introduced you to Jeff Adams, we'll do it again. Jeff Adams came to us from SBI. And we have another one that's in the process of going through the background investigation, and also from Draper PD. So we anticipate having five investigators to help deal with some of the backlog and issues such as that. So anyway.
Thank you. On the agenda next, we have the approval of the January 4th meeting minutes. Hopefully you've had an opportunity to review those. Any changes, corrections? Seeing none, I'll take a motion. Have a motion to approve. Second?
Second.
Second, John Crowley. All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Stand approved. Let's go right to the agenda. We'll go ahead and have our annual and quarterly reports. Lieutenant Acosta.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to St. George, if you've never been here before. No. I'd like to take an opportunity to introduce Taylor Conti. She's now my assistant in investigations. So if you get phone calls from her occasionally, it's at my request. So welcome her. Thank you very much. Just going over the annual report, just wanted to talk a little bit about 2014 and then 2015. In 2014, my office took 157 complaints, and in 2015, we took 128 complaints. Of those, we opened up 94 investigations in 14, 83 in 15. Administrative hearings that were conducted, only two in 2014 and one in 2015. Cases closed with no action were 22 in 2014 and 17 total in 2015. Presented before council, 54 cases in 2014 and 42 in 2015, so we're down a little bit. We issued revocations, were five revocations in 14, three revocations in 15, suspensions, 36 in 14, 32 in 15, and letters of caution, 11 in 2014 and 7 in 2015. We reviewed a total of 757 peace officer applications in 14, 746 applications in 15. Waivers and reactivation applications, 63 in 14, 81 in 15. Dispatch applications, 127 in 14, 158 in 2015. A total of 947 applications for 14, 985 for 2015. And our annual report for the last quarter for total complaints received since we had our meeting in January, we had a total of 36 complaints that have come in. 23 of those have been open investigations. We've had no administrative hearings. We've closed six cases with no action. And we had 10 voluntary relinquishments. So we're up from one from the previous quarter. The allegations were sexual abuse of a child, domestic violence, assault, fitness for duty, obstruction of justice, public urination, custodial sexual misconduct, we had a couple of those, voyeurism and trespassing, child abuse, neglect, and possession of controlled substance and paraphernalia. Peace officer application reviews, we did 136 in the last quarter. Waivers, 24. Dispatch, 22. So a total of 182 applications reviewed. Currently, we have 91 active investigations and 100 open cases. So there's a little difference in the number of cases we actually have out at some state of waiting for the officers to call back in. Any questions for investigations? All right. Thank you very much.
Before we move on to Lieutenant Brewer, I forgot to mention we have a new council member, Victoria McFarland. She's from the AG's office. U.S. Attorney, excuse me, at large seat. Would you like to take a second?
Sure.
Not really, but sure.
Sure.
A little bit about yourself, maybe.
Yes, I have been with the U.S. Attorney's Office now for about a year and a half. Prior to that, I was a prosecutor with West Valley City for about 6 years. And prior to that, I was a prosecutor on contract with some of the local municipalities in Salt Lake for about a year and a half. I've always been interested in what the council does. And so when this opportunity for the at-large seat came up, I was anxious to apply for it and just very happy to be here and be part of this process.
Well, thank you. And we're happy to have you here. Sorry for the oversight there. Welcome. All right, we'll go ahead and continue then. Lieutenant Brewer.
Good afternoon, council members. One thing that Victoria failed to let us know is that she is one of our instructors at Post, and she does an awesome job. The cadets just love how she teaches. So thank you, Victoria, for that. So the annual report for 2015 regarding the training section. So the training section, in-service training, we conducted 114 in-service training programs on 17 different topics. And those programs were attended by 2,230 officers. So during 2015, 6 basic training academy sessions were conducted at Post, and 148 individuals received certification, law enforcement certification. Now that includes the SFO and the LEO. And then I'll talk a little bit about what those statistics mean regarding how we compare at Post versus the satellite academies. So the total number of new peace officer certifications issued by Post, including all satellite programs, were 434 special function officer, 313 correctional officer, and 423 law enforcement officers received certifications statewide. So that does include all satellite academies. And if you were to compare that to previous years, you will see that we are starting to... Sorry, that's not me. I'm not throwing my voice around. Yeah, that's a good way to get everybody's attention, right, drawn back in. I thought it was you, Chris. That was a mean joke. Anyways, if you were to look at where we are trending from 2014 to 2015, we are on a slight upward trend. And that does make sense for 2016 numbers compared to last year's numbers, because we have already added a class. And we did, like we have said at the beginning of this year, we want to make sure that we meet the demands that agencies have for hiring new officers. So we recognize there are a lot of vacancies out there.
Yes.
So we recognize the vacancies. We want to make sure, especially if the need is there for the smaller agencies, we will make sure to get your people into those training academies. So just a couple of other annual numbers. The attrition rate for the post program is right around 6%. Historically, it's been somewhere between 7 and 9%. So some of the reasons why cadets fail the program. The number one reason was The number one reason was for failed certification exams, and four of the 16 that failed during 2015 failed exams. Two of them failed the law enforcement entrance exam, which means when they come to the LEO block, they have to pass that exam to even to enter the training. One failed to complete the end post by the deadline. Three agency dismissals, so that means three agencies chose to remove their cadets from the program. Usually that's due to a termination. And then we did have one injury during 2015. Any questions regarding the 2015 annual numbers for in-service or basic training before I get to the quarterly report? So our first quarter for 2016, we have three class sessions in session right now. So I just want to talk about those numbers really quick. So on January 4th, we started session 318 with 24 cadets, 22 passed the SFO, two incompletes for the following reasons. One was for failure of the PT exit standard, and then one failed the certification exam. So those two did not continue on into the LEO block. And currently, 318 is in the LEO block, and they're slated to graduate April 21st, and right now there's 33 cadets in that class. 319 started January 25th with 17. All 17 passed the SFO certification and moved on to the LEO block, where they're currently in session, and they're slated to graduate May 12th of this year. And then 320 is currently in the SFO block. We started with six, and they are going to be taking their test, I believe, this coming week. It's going to be next week where they'll move on to the LEO block. And we will have 17 total, so we're going to start on March 30th, add 11 cadets for that LEO block. And that session was added due to some agencies saying that they needed people, and so we went ahead and added one more session to that, to the current training schedule. So for this first quarter, we conducted 29 in-service classes, training 664 officers for a total of 468 hours of in-service training for quarter one of 2016. And that actually is an upward trend. This is a pretty busy quarter for us. Any questions regarding anything in-service training or the basic training? Okay, seeing none, I'm done. Well, yes, we'll do, Sheriff.
Let's go ahead and I'll take the prerogative to swap number four for number five, and let's have you stay there and go ahead and do the Satellite Academy audits.
You bet. I'll move into those and
administrative rule
and talk about that. So there were three Satellite Academy audits conducted this first quarter of 2016. The first was Salt Lake City Police Department. They currently have 17 individuals in their academy. I believe there is at least one attrition that they've had, and they're slated to graduate the first week of April. Who is their director? Their director is Lieutenant Lance Van Dognan under Chief Mike Brown. So there are no exceptions to the Salt Lake City's administrative audit. And they seem to be doing a good job. They're very busy. Their training staff also conducts all of the in-service training for Salt Lake City Police Department, as well as the basic training group. The next audit that we conducted was the Utah Department of Corrections, which is under the direction of Director Kirk Christensen, and Director Cook, which he's not here, but you're sitting in for him, is the administrative director who he reports to. And we met with them on March 9th, reviewed their processes, and they're doing a good job and do not have any exceptions to report for the administrative audit. The final satellite audit report that was conducted was UN Basin Applied Technology, and if you remember from the last council meeting, this was on the heels of an approval that the post council gave Uinta Basin to start their academy back up again. So Captain Sparks and I went to the basin and did a site visit to see how their infrastructure is and look at their area of being able to train, and met with them. Plus, they have just recently hired their academy director, which is, some of you may know him, Carlos Reed. He retired from the Utah Highway Patrol a number of years ago and went to work for the Bureau of Indian Affairs and their wildlife group, and then has been retired for a few years. So he knows about law enforcement, has a little bit of history in training, so they're very pleased to get him. One of the problems they were running up against is they want to run a daytime academy there at the basin, and it's very hard for a local law enforcement officer to take on a daytime job when they're supposed to be working during the day. So they needed somebody who was willing to work part-time and be able to run that program during the day. So they feel very, very fortunate to have Carlos Reed as their director. And we're working with them very closely to get their academy back up and going. They would like to start training in May of this year, and they're going to offer all three blocks of training, SFO, BCO, and the LEO block. So really there's nothing to report on them other than just getting their process up and going. We'll work very closely with them for their first year, like we have done with all other academies coming online. And I'm sure we'll work through some bugs with them. But there is definitely a need in that area to get some homegrown folks trained so then they can stay in that area and work for agencies. So any questions regarding the Satellite Academy process or these reports of the audits? Okay. I think that's it, Chairman.
Thank you. All right. We'll turn the time over to Director Stevenson for an administrative rule change.
Thank you, Chair. As the title explains, I'm attempting to define what actively engaged means. In our statute 536206 and 536208, and maybe a couple other times, actively engaged is the term that's used. And there's no definition. And I get questions, and I don't know what to say. Back in 2009 or 2010, I sent out a letter attempting to define what actively engaged means. Now, I'll give you some background on why I'm asking for your consent and approval to move forward with this administrative rule proposal. This is pertaining to auxiliary officers and reserve officers. An auxiliary officer is a special functions officer, so they get 5 weeks of training, and then they can function as an officer as long as they are in the presence of a full sworn peace officer or law enforcement officer. A reserve officer is a law enforcement officer, so they've gone through the entire academy, they may be working for another agency, and they're employed by another law enforcement agency to work as a part-time officer. That is a reserve officer. Now, I want to clarify, because some of the questions I've had in the past regarding those that are full-time, have full-time employment and yet work part-time for another department. This doesn't even deal with them. They already work full-time and their hours are being submitted. So this actively engaged comes up from time to time regarding these two positions within our law enforcement community. So actively engaged, the impetus for doing this is to create uniformity throughout the state in how administrators deal and interact and require their officers to either work or train within their law enforcement department. My letter did not provide a clear avenue or guideline for an administrator to manage their reserve or auxiliary programs. So, my proposal is this. My initial proposal was 120 hours, 40 hours of in-service training, which is required by statute, and 80 hours throughout the year. The initial required them to work on average 8 hours a month. After sending it out to the chiefs and sheriffs and receiving feedback, that was a little too restrictive, and I can understand why now. Some people are busy and they can't always work that one shift a month. So I went back, and what I'm proposing now, and everybody seems to be in agreement, is 60 hours they have to work annually,
on top of the 40 hours of in-service training requirement. And the reason why I find this important to implement, one, again, the uniformity issue, consistency throughout the state, and then also I think there's an increased liability when a department employs someone on the books and doesn't have them work under some consistent work regimen. And they're interacting with the public, and I think it opens up departments and administrators to a higher level of liability. So I think it's important for somebody to go to training and then also apply that training as they interact with the public. So that is the reasoning for this definition. And so I am asking for a vote, Chair, on support to move forward and creating this an administrative rule to clearly define what actively engaged means.
I'll open it up for discussion from the body.
I'm going to say the director and I had this conversation earlier, and I do agree that I think we do need to have some consistency throughout the state. And as far as making sure that our officers are receiving the training and are staying up to date with what's going on in our individual agencies, I think this is a reasonable approach. We staff 276 special events a year, and so we hire a lot of officers from other agencies. Some of those are part-time reserve officers, but I'm certainly not opposed to supporting this personally. I think that it's a good policy.
Thank you.
So prior to this, actively engaged could have been defined as a person getting 40 hours of in-service training and spending 1 hour a year working, or no hours, or just actively
engaged.
Hanging out. I'm trying to give
it was left to your interpretation.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I would show support for that as well to have a baseline standard.
Thank you. Yes.
So would this complete the process for the administrative rule, or is there an additional process that would go through to become statute?
What would happen if this body decides to support this? Then I would put it to administrative rule. It has to go for public review for 30 days, and then we have to answer any comments that may come up, and go before the Rules Committee if they should have any glaring questions or concerns.
Just as a matter of state policy, all the rules are administrative rules are, if they want to be reviewed by the legislature every year.
Uh-huh.
So there is opportunity for their input should they have an issue legislatively with it.
Thank you. That's a good point.
There was additional scrutiny from the Department of Public Safety or anything else. This is it. So let me just share the perspective that I shared with Director Stevenson. This came to my attention because on my county commission, I serve with two law enforcement officers, two that are on that serve on the county commission now have both had their careers in law enforcement, one with Riverdale PD, one with our own Weber County Sheriff's Office. And they are pretty well convinced that they're going to end up back in law enforcement. These political stints tend to be short-term, if you know what I mean, if you do anything. And so it's just been a topic of discussion in our office because, you know, they are busy, right? And frankly, they're advocates for this profession in a big way. It's a positive thing in a lot of ways. But trying to figure out how to handle, I mean, they're both got some arrangements with reserve responsibility somehow, but trying to figure out how to make that all work is a challenge for them, and so their concerns that I pass on today have been along the lines of, man, we have a hard time getting good people in this profession anyway, enough of them all the time, and here's some people that want to come back, and if they do something else for a while, it becomes harder to do that. I will not pretend to be an expert in as to what that level of maintenance of that skill set would require. And I think it makes sense that there be some level there. I'm not sure what that level would be. And so, one of them mentioned to me a few minutes ago as I talked with him on the phone, maybe 40 and 40 makes a little more sense. But I only say that to represent his view, because I'm going to trust those of you in the room that are experts in this as to what you really think an appropriate level is for that training that can be and that is a perishable skill. So I think we're on the right path here. I just wanted you to hear a perspective from some of the voices that I have heard, and just keep that in mind as we figure where that balance is. And I also recognize, Director, that I'm late to the game on this discussion. You've been dealing with this for a long time, so I'm also going to defer to the fact that you've been through the process of putting this out there to the associations and trying to figure out what the appropriate level of feedback is. So I just put that out for your discussion or for your thought during the discussion.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Chair, if I could just kind of enlighten about the process and some of the feedback that I've received from various chiefs and sheriffs from across the state. Some, you know, again, struggled with even having a set number of hours because of the unique situations they may find themselves in. Others thought anything under 180 wasn't enough. So, I mean, it was, so I think I've tried to find a happy balance to also maintain the integrity of the certification and the profession as people interact with the public. So I did take into consideration several opinions and recommendations. So.
Yes. Colonel?
From what I understand is it's not like you are micromanaging the departments and said these individuals will wear a uniform and go to traffic control. This is simply 60 hours working within the department. They could be in consultation. They could be doing background investigations. They could be helping build a pay plan. They can be doing anything for that department. It doesn't have to be in uniform. It has to be actively engaged in that.
Yes.
So I think that kind of opens the door, too, to give these guys a little bit more flexibility, these administrators in other areas that they can help out in their areas of expertise.
Thank you for bringing that up, because that is exactly right. Some departments have part-time investigators. That's actively engaged, in my opinion. We still want to allow autonomy to the administrators to manage and maintain their officers how they see fit to a certain degree. Again, it's a minimum standard, and how you put them to work is really meeting the needs of your own individual circumstances.
And just for comment and background, I mean, we hire quite a few too, probably as many as 50 part-time, but our requirements are 300 hours. You know, that to us covers the issues of competency, and then that includes their 40 hours of training that's required, plus then the interaction at that level to maintain the skill. So ours is pretty high, but it can go, and I know there's others that may be even higher, but ours is 300 that we require. And again, it becomes more problematic in the smaller communities where there are less applicants and less qualified people versus maybe a half million as is our county. But I think all in all that this is a pretty good compromise across the board as far as minimums and maximums.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion that we adopt this proposal of his definition of actively engaged. I think that the major looked at the highs and the lows and then recognized the needs of the administrators and their offices and different things. I think it's a good idea, so I would.
That motion. Right. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we have lots of seconds.
I'm going to vote for it because I'm looking forward to getting these two out of the office.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Is there any last discussion? Seeing no discussion, we'll call for a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, it passes.
Thank you, Council.
All right, we'll move forward into disciplinary cases. Mr. Yaki.
Good afternoon. I'm going to move some of these around. These are in alphabetical order, so I'm just going to go in a slightly different order than this. The first matter I'm going to present is the certification of Denise Jones, formerly employed with the Salt Lake City Airport Police Department. Offense is driving under the influence of alcohol, which falls under Category D of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a two-year suspension, and this is based on high breath alcohol content and the fact that a traffic accident was the result of the alcohol. Summary of the facts are as follows. On July 13th, 2015, On December 16, 2014, Denise Jones was involved in a two-vehicle traffic crash in which Jones drifted out of her lane to the left and sideswiped another vehicle. During the crash investigation, officers detected the odor of alcohol coming from Jones. When asked to perform field sobriety tests, Jones said, "I have been drinking. I will fail the test." While receiving the instructions for the nine-step walk and turn, Jones said she was too intoxicated to do the test. When the officer asked Jones if she was impaired, Jones replied, "I'm drunk. Let's call it quits." Jones was subsequently arrested for driving under the influence. Jones submitted to an intoxilizer test, which indicated she had a breath alcohol content of 0.181. Charges of driving under the influence and failure to operate within a single lane were subsequently filed on Jones, and on May 19, 2015, Jones entered a plea of guilty to the amended charge of impaired driving. Jones failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and on January 27, 2016, an order of default was signed by the administrative law judge and mailed to Jones.
Thank you. Is Ms. Jones here or her counsel? I see no representation or Ms. Jones. I'll go ahead and open it for discussion.
Make a motion to accept the post counsel's recommendation of 2-year suspension.
I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion from Mr. Crowley.
I'll second.
Second. Second from Commissioner Gibson. We have a motion to second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, call for a vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, be a 2-year suspension then is approved. Thank you. Next.
The next matter I'm going to present is the certification of Holly Ziegelhorn. She's formerly a member of the West Valley Police Department. Sustained allegation is a BCI violation, which falls under category E of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a 9-month suspension, and this is based on multiple offenses. A summary of the facts are as follows. On May 16, 2014, Holly Ziegelhorn was investigated by her agency for accessing Utah Bureau of Criminal Identification records for non-law enforcement purposes. On June 26, 2014, West Valley Police Department conducted a Garrity interview with Ziegelhorn. During the interview, Ziegelhorn admitted to accessing BCI records for non-law enforcement purposes. The administrative investigation determined Ziegelhorn unlawfully accessed BCI records on 8 different people. The case was investigated criminally by a local law enforcement agency, and on October 27, 2014, charges were filed by a local court for 3 BCI violations. On October 26, 2015, the charges were dismissed for lack of evidence. On September 3, 2015, Post conducted a Garrity interview with Ziegelhorn. Ziegelhorn admitted to accessing driver's license records through BCI on 8 people, explaining that 5 records were accessed for personal reasons and 3 were accessed as part of her assigned duties as a peace officer. At the conclusion of the Post investigation, Post determined Ziegelhorn accessed 5 records unlawfully. On March 8, 2016, Ziegelhorn waived her right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Is Ms. Ziegelhorn here or her counsel? Please come up.
Counsel Lindsay Jarvis on behalf of Ms. Ziegelhorn, who is present. One of the things that we were hoping that you would take into consideration when looking at this particular discipline is the fact that I've had a chance to go through and look at the discipline that Post Counsel has imposed since 2011 when this law changed. And what I found as I've gone through the facts is that in a lot of these cases, what we're seeing is officers who are using the database system in an effort to stalk ex-wives, to try and get information about cadets to see if they're single. And then we've got the other ones where people are looking up information about their aliases because they're narcotics officers. And what we've seen is an imposition of a letter of caution all the way up to 2 years when they're coupled with different offenses. In this particular case, Ms. Ziegelhorn committed these offenses, and what she had done was actually access this for purposes of her family. In 2 of these instances, it was a situation where she was looking for driver's license information for to get her children insurance. Another situation, she was helping her elderly parents get an address to which she accessed these driver's license information. We obviously dealt with the criminal charges. They were thrown out as a result of the lack of evidence. We were able to show that she was, in fact, acting in a law enforcement purpose. And so our request today would be that you consider deviating downward, given the fact that this falls under B, that we would look at the 6 months on this one. And the reason primarily that we're asking this is not a situation where she's accessing the system to try and increase her statistics. It's not something where she's stalking or received any sort of personal gain. From her position, she was trying to help family members. She understands without question that there was better ways that she could have done this. She's definitely been put through the ringer with the criminal process. She also received a 30-day suspension from her agency, which in looking at the previous cases is far more than what has been imposed by other agencies in the past. And so with that being said, she also went in immediately after these charges were brought to her attention. She took a BCI training course. She also recognized the fact that West Valley had failed to update their policies and procedures since the law had changed. And so she was instrumental in going in and bringing this to the chief's attention. West Valley updated their policies and procedures and activated training at that point. And so because of that, as I said, you know, we've seen this go from letter of caution to suspensions. In this case, we're asking for a six-month suspension so we can get her back to work immediately.
All right, thank you. Ms. Zijorn, would you like to address council?
Sure. I just want to thank you for this opportunity, and I'm grateful that it's at the ending stages, and I've learned a lot, and I know that I will find other ways in the future for this, and anyway, I hope you take into consideration everything that's been presented to you today. Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Zijorn from the? Yes, sir.
If I can propose something in rebuttal, counsel. For us, Post feels that the 9 month recommendation is very generous. We feel that there's five separate incidents on this matter, with each incident being a 6 month general baseline on each one. So with the 9 months, we feel that Post is being extremely generous with this, and that's where we would go.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions from the council for Ms. Zijorn?
Mr. Chairman, I have some. Is there a prior history with Post, Mr. Yockey?
With Ms. Eaglehorn?
Yeah. And can I ask how long she's been on, at her certificate?
She's been an alum.
Mr. Chairman, I have another question, and I'm not sure if it's for Mr. Yockey or for Director Stevenson. In reading these online and looking, taking a step back and looking at the act, and the act was accessing the BCI accessing the BCI records. We have another case here before us, where it's a clear BCI violation. Looks like it may have accessed just as many records. But we're going from a letter of caution to 9 months on this one here. When if we look at the act, it's the act that we're looking at. And the act is accessing the BCI records. And I've read both of them, and for the most part, you could probably make the argument that they're both the same. And I'm not comfortable with the 9 month suspension if we're looking at a letter of caution on the other one.
If I may. The facts on that one will be presented later, but the facts on that one are slightly different. We actually had an active case on that one. There was an active case in which the individual was looking up records for another agency, was looking up the friend's records for a friend, who then handed the records to the friend to hand to the other agency, whereas this one is a little more for the personal use.
Well, that one is just as much personal use. It's an active case that he had no jurisdiction over. Is that correct?
Correct.
And personal use, and so it's personal use.
I'm simply distinguishing them.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
No problem.
I don't have anything to add to what Mr. Yockey said.
Any other discussions or questions?
Did you say there'd already been a suspension, or what's your work status now?
She's currently unemployed, and she had no previous dealings with Post.
What was the date of her? What was the date of your termination or leave from the?
I resigned October 23rd,
of last year,
2015.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's
All right.
But I also had a 30-day suspension, which I took in September 1st through the end of September, without pay.
All right, thank you.
Which we are going to that date. Yes. We are going to that date.
Yes, that would be the effective date from that point forward. October
23rd.
23rd, is that it?
No. 2014?
No.
15.
What's the date, just for clarification?
We gave her credit for the 30 days. Yeah, I think it's July 28th, just off the top of my head.
Yeah, so the date, the reason being is she was removed from all police functions. Her badge, vehicle, gun, everything was removed in July. I believe July
21st.
And at that point, the administration handed down the 30-day suspension after that, following that. So we generally, based on the post recommended disciplinary action, we go from the date in which the individual is unable to function as a peace officer.
So in the past. Yes. All right. So that's July 21st, just for clarification.
Correct.
All right.
And just to be clear, all of these were family related. There was 5 different incidents.
There was 8 incidents. She actually works as a peer support person for the West Valley Police Department. So on 2 of these incidents, they were actually officers that she didn't have an address for that she went out to visit. And so that's why those ones were gone. The rest of them were 2 children, 2 elderly parents to which she was helping. There was a missing person. I believe that was one of the ones. Brad, correct me if I'm wrong on that one. There was a missing person that was a relative, which I believe that post determined was actually a law enforcement function. And so, yes, they're family members is what they were, in an effort to try and assist them.
One last question. Is the agency intending to rehire?
No, she resigned with no intention to go back.
Okay. All right, thank you. All right, just for clarification to the council, as of the 21st of this month, that would have been 8 months. So just for the math challenged, which would be me. All right. Yes.
Would you entertain a motion?
Yes, I would.
I'd like to make a motion that we issue a letter of caution for Ms. Ziegenhorn.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to recuse
myself. Okay. Ms. McFarland will recuse herself. We have a motion. Do we have a second? We have a second. Okay, to be clear, we have a motion for a letter of caution from the 9-month suspension. And a second. Is there further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
Nay.
No.
Nay.
All right, we'll need hands. Those that are in favor, please raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Do I have 7? Okay, we have 7. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Do I vote in a tie?
Yes.
I vote in a tie.
If he is the mantle.
I'm going to vote no on this. Break the tie to no. So that is defeated, and we look for another motion. Yes,
sir. Motion for 6-month suspension.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion for 6-month suspension. Second by Chief. Who did that? Who did second? Oh, yes. Okay. Yes.
On the 9-month suspension, since she's been without peace officer powers for 8 months, would that be 1 more month?
Yes, it would.
Either those all go back, so she'd be.
Yes. The 6-month would affect the time served.
Right. So, yeah.
So we have that. Okay, we have a motion and a second for 6-month suspension. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay, 1, 2 opposed. All right. I move that the motion passes with a 6-month suspension. And that, again, would have started in July.
Thank you.
Thank you, Council. Appreciate your time.
All right.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Sean Cannon. He He is currently employed with the Utah Department of Public Safety. Sustained allegation is BCI violation, which falls under category E of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a letter of caution, and a summary of the facts are as follows. On July 13, 2015, Sean Cannon conducted a license plate search through the Utah Bureau of Criminal Identification database in an attempt to help a friend identify a subject who had been assaulted, who had assaulted the friend. The friend said he had had a report to the local police agency but felt dismissed by the investigating officer. Cannon conducted a record search with the partial plate information provided by the friend and found some possible license plate matches. Cannon provided the license plate numbers to the friends to give to the investigating agency. When the friend gave the license plate information to the investigating officer, he was told Cannon should not have conducted the record search. Cannon was investigated by his agency and during the Garrity interview admitted accessing the vehicle registration records through BCI to assist a friend in identifying a suspect for another agency's police investigation. Cannon was suspended for one day without pay and lost BCI access for 10 months. A local law enforcement agency conducted a criminal investigation on Cannon for a BCI violation. The case was screened with the county attorney who declined to file charges. On February 24, 2016, Cannon waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Is Mr. Cannon or his representative here? I see no one rising. Return it to the council for either discussion or a motion.
Just a question for clarification.
Yes.
Along with the license plate number, he also turned over one address, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And yes.
Mr. Chairman, Chief actually raised his
hand. I'm just unclear why there was a letter of caution on this one and 9 months on the other one. Like, if I'm missing something.
No, no problem. So the for how post, how we distinguished it is we had the other five, since it's already adjudicated, we can't go back on the other one. The five were done because it was for personal reasons. She was looking up address information for family members and placing it on numbers. This one, the reason we felt it distinguished it was because it was for an active case. The violation occurred when the individual provided the information to the friend to give to the local law enforcement agency. And so we felt because it was for technically a law enforcement purpose and not for a personal reason, there was enough, it was still technically a violation, but because of the law enforcement reason, we felt their letter of caution was sufficient.
So the act was for a legal purpose, but the manner was inappropriate? Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
So, Mr. Chairman, yes. I'd like to get to that. Technically, it was a violation. Correct?
Correct.
Okay. Now, it looks like he accessed, it says the counties, so we're going to go with more than one county, so at least two counties. And then the address of one registered owner, so that's three, at least three violations, and then provided the view of a driver's license photo, so that makes four violations. Minimum four violations, if not more searches, correct?
No. It was only one partial plate search,
driver's
so
license
it was just one record search, whereas the other one was five separate occasions.
Does counties just mean unified dispatch? Is that all that means? Or is he saying multiple databases?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Is
it so we're getting very technical on the BCI stuff. When you do a record search through BCI for partial plate, it pulls up everything for that partial plate, and so the offense occurred in the one county, and he just did one partial plate search.
And so, to be clear, Mr. Chairman, he had no jurisdiction over the case itself. Is that correct?
Correct.
And not involved. His agency was involved in no manner whatsoever.
Correct.
And it was for a personal request from the. So who did was the request asked of him, or did he offer it?
From what I understand, he offered it.
He offered it.
His friend came to him frustrated and he offered it.
Okay. You bet. Any further questions or discussion? I'll look for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion that we recommend a 6-month suspension for this BCI violation.
Okay. We have a motion to move from a letter of caution to a 6-month suspension. Is there a second?
Chair, I'll just recuse myself as part of my agency.
Okay, Colonel Fuhrer will be recusing himself. I'll call second time for a second. Is there a second for the 6-month suspension?
Second.
Seeing none, that motion dies for lack of a second. I'll entertain any subsequent motions.
Make a motion for a three-month because he turned over personal information on the one address.
Okay, we have a motion for a three-month suspension.
I'll second.
And we have a second. Mary, yeah. All right. Do you have any other discussion on that three-month recommendation? Okay, having a motion and a second, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion passes, and it'll be 3 months.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Chad Johnson Koffler. He is formerly a member of the Iron County Sheriff's Department. The sustained allegation is threat and use of dangerous weapon in a fight or quarrel, which falls under Category A of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is revocation. A summary of the facts are as follows. On March 12, 2014, Chad Koffler, three other cadets, and two teenage children of one of the cadets went to a local restaurant for dinner. Koffler sat on the inside of the booth with two other cadets at his right. While at dinner, Koffler and one of the other cadets began to engage in what began as playful banter. Koffler thought the banter went too far and got upset. Koffler stated he needed to go to the restroom, and the cadet with whom he had been bantering with made a comment joking about Koffler having a small bladder. Koffler got upset at the comment and was also upset at the other two cadets for not moving and letting him out of the booth. Koffler removed his SIG 1911 from its holster on his right hip, lightly pressed the muzzle of the gun into the side of the cadet with whom he had been bantering with, and told him to move. Koffler then reholstered the weapon. The other cadets let Koffler out of the booth. An argument ensued and continued to the restroom and into the parking lot of the restaurant. The incident was investigated by the academy staff as well as by the police. On March 13, 2014, Koffler was dismissed from the academy and was terminated from the Iron County Sheriff's Department. On April 8, 2014, charges were filed on Koffler for threatening with or using a dangerous weapon in a fight or quarrel, a Class A misdemeanor. Koffler failed to respond to multiple attempts by post to contact him. The criminal case is still pending, and Koffler failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and thus, on March 14, 2016, an order of default was signed by the administrative law judge and mailed to Koffler.
Thank you. Is Mr. Koffler here or his counsel? I see no one rising. I'll bring it back to the committee for, or excuse me, to the board for a motion.
I'll make a motion to accept.
Okay, we have two.
Two first. Okay, okay. I'll go first.
John Crowley for
motion to accept termination.
Okay. And a second by Chief Wade Carpenter. All right, we have a motion to accept the revocation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Dustin J. Nilsen, formerly a member of the Miller County Sheriff's Office. Sustained allegation is theft and possession of controlled substance, prescription drugs, which falls under categories A and D of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is revocation. A summary of the facts are as follows. On June 23, 2015, Dustin Nilsen removed an evidence bag containing three oxycodone tablets from an inmate's intake folder for the purposes of using them at a later time. The theft was subsequently discovered and an investigation was initiated. On June 24, 2015, Nilsen reported to a supervisor he had stolen the oxycodone. During Garrity interviews with both his agency and post, Nilsen admitted to taking the tablets, however denied using them for personal use. Nilsen was terminated by his agency. No criminal charges were filed. Nilsen failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and on January 27, 2016, an order of default was signed by the administrative law judge and mailed to Nilsen.
Thank you. Is Mr. Nielsen here or his counsel? Okay, I see no one rising again. I'll return back to the council for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'll recuse myself.
All right. Sheriff Decker will recuse himself.
I'll move it.
Okay, we have Frank Budden.
I'll
second.
All right. And Bruce Bailey has a second to accept post counsel's or post's recommendation of revocation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
The next matter is the certification of Cheryl Pickett, currently a member of the Bountiful Police Department. Sustained allegation is driving under the influence of alcohol, which falls under Category D of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is 1 year suspension. A summary of the facts are as follows. On September 7, 2015, Cheryl Pickett was pulled over for speeding violation in Wyoming by a local agency. The investigating officer detected the odor of alcohol and had Pickett perform a field sobriety test. It was determined Pickett was under the influence of alcohol. Pickett was arrested and submitted to the breath test, which indicated her breath alcohol content was 0.121. Pickett was booked into the county jail and charged with driving under the influence. On December 29, 2015, Pickett pled guilty to the charge of driving under the influence to be held in abeyance and was sentenced to 3 years probation. On February 25, 2016, Cheryl Pickett waived her right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action. Just for the council's, if you haven't had a chance, this was submitted yesterday. There is a letter of support. If you haven't had a chance, please take a short bit of time.
Is that letter in our packet then?
It all should right. be.
Give, all right, I don't have one. Give you a minute to review that letter, and then we'll resume our action. All right, hopefully you've been able to review that letter. I'll return the matter to council for discussion or a motion.
Question?
Yes.
Can we add the difference between this one and Denise Jones?
The difference between Denise Jones and, so the reason we went 2 years, we generally go to 18 months for an aggravating factor. The reason why we went 2 years on Denise Jones is because of the high breath alcohol content, double, and the traffic crash. On this one, it's 0.121 versus the 0.181 on the other one with the traffic crash.
Yeah, and there's no accident in this case, right?
Correct. No accident.
Any other questions? Yes.
Chairman, I'm going to recuse myself on this one.
Okay. The mayor is recusing himself. Yes.
I'd ask Director Stevenson, have we discussed or ever discussed the difference in a non-certified peace officer and an employee? She's certified as a dispatcher, I guess.
Yes.
But is there or should there be a difference between what in essence really is an LAO on one side and a civilian employee on the other?
And if I can, I'll address this for you. The difference, so in, as far as the statutes are the same. I don't believe that the council or post has addressed this previously as far as the difference between it, to post, because of the statute, a certification is a certification.
It's a public safety position under the statute. I don't know that we've made a distinction before. Yes.
Does post make any considerations for acceptance of responsibility?
We do. We do. When an individual self-reports or acceptance of responsibility, if they come forward and show some, that in the past we have done that. On this one,
just comparing with the previous one where there was no response to the inquiry, there was no, speaking of Ms. Jones, and it appears that Ms. Pickett was cooperative with all the proceedings up to and including
the plea
and also engaging in substance abuse counseling, where it appears that Ms. Jones didn't even respond to requests from the investigators.
So you're saying the difference between defaulting on it versus signing a waiver to a hearing.
Not even defaulting, but just willingness to engage in the investigation process.
I don't know if we've necessarily considered that before, but that's up to the council to decide.
Right. Council is, as a council, we're free to consider any of the issues or facts as either mitigating or aggravating. Yes.
Director. We look at the guidelines. It's going to have to be very compelling for me to go outside of the baseline. And that baseline is the consistency that we have researched when we created this document. So it's got to be very compelling for me to deviate from that. Again, that is your prerogative as a council. So that gives you a little idea of how we approach this.
Just to clarify, too, she did lie to the officer upon contact, right? About the number of drinks that she had?
She did. Any further questions, discussion? All right, I'll look for a motion.
Motion to accept the 1 year.
Okay, we have a motion to accept the 1 year suspension. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, John Carroll, second. All right, any further discussion? Call a question then. All those in favor, 1 year suspension, say aye.
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 Any nays?
Oh, unanimous. I'm not sure if we gave the individual a chance.
That's true. We did
before.
Not. I'm sorry. Is Ms. Pickett here?
I wasn't sure.
Okay. We're batting 1,000. All right. Thank you. Next case.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Eric Zeman. He is currently certified with the Utah Highway Patrol. Sustained allegation is unlawful taking / possession of protected wildlife, which falls under Category E of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a letter of caution. A summary of the facts are as follows. On October 10, 2015, Eric Zeman was hunting spike elk with a friend when he accidentally shot a cow elk. Zeman was trying to shoot a spike elk in a herd of cow elk. Zeman immediately contacted law enforcement and reported his actions. Zeman also notified his supervisor. Zeman took the dead elk to the trailhead where he met a law enforcement officer who conducted an investigation. The officer took the elk but allowed Zeman to keep his hunting license and permit. The case was screened with the county attorney and Zeman was issued a written warning. Administrative investigations were conducted by Zeman's agency and post. Zeman's agency determined he violated the law, but he retained his employment and was not disciplined. During a Garrity interview with post, Zeman admitted to accidentally shooting the cow elk while only having a spike elk permit. Zeman explained he was aiming at the spike elk and did not intentionally shoot the cow. On March 7th, 2016, Zeman waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Okay. Is Ms. Washington here?
Zeman.
Or Zeman, excuse me. Or counsel? I see no one. Rising, okay. We have a letter of caution as recommended action. I have a motion on that.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I have a question, actually.
Okay.
Director Stevenson, is the letter of caution the lowest form we have available, or do we have an option for no action?
You have an option
for
no action.
Okay. The reason is, Mr. Chairman, is from all accounts that I can read, he did everything right. And certainly, being out hunting, this could happen. And I don't believe that a letter of caution should even be placed in this gentleman's file, because he did follow, what happened was unfortunate, but he did follow the rules, did the right thing, cooperated, and to have this in his file just because of that, I don't think is reasonable.
Yes.
As I explained earlier, that's the guidelines the council has approved. The lowest end is a letter of caution. I will never go outside those guidelines. It's your prerogative as a council to net out any sanction or not.
I'd agree, Mayor. I mean, that's the prescription for action, exactly what occurred by the law to remedy that situation. Doesn't mean that you haven't violated the law, but that is the actions requested to do by the hunter is to bring the game in, turn it in, and report it.
Mr. Checkers. I think I would add that I'm not a great shot, and you know, I'm usually the bird dog when I go hunting pheasants. So I also think, though, that a letter of caution to me seems appropriate, because if you're going to shoot, and there, you know, there's a spike out there, and you know you're either going to miss or you're going to hit it, that's a little different than shooting into a pack. So I think it's okay to caution this officer, and that would be my position.
Any further discussion? I'll call for a motion then.
I'll make a motion. We take no action.
Okay.
Second.
We have a We have a motion by the mayor to take no action. And who seconded it? Okay. Sheriff Noel. Any further discussion? All right, seeing none, I'll call for question. All those in favor of no action say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Raise hands on the opposed. Three opposed. Okay. Move that the motion passes. There'll be no action.
Chair, I recuse myself for Julie's records.
Okay. Thank you, Kendra Few. All right.
And I missed one. The final.
Brittany, did we do that one?
Yes, no. Brittany's my final one. Yes, I apologize for that. The final matter is the certification of Brittany R. Washington, currently employed with the Unified Police Department. Sustained allegation is driving under the influence of alcohol, which falls under Category D of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a one-year suspension. A summary of the facts are as follows. On January 25, 2015, Brittany Washington was investigated by a local agency for driving under the influence after being stopped for not having her headlights on, her headlights turned on. Washington submitted to a standard field sobriety test, which indicated impairment. Washington was charged with DUI. Washington submitted to an intoxilizer test, which indicated she had a breath alcohol content of 0.139. Washington subsequently pled guilty to an amended charge of impaired driving. During Garrity interviews with Post and her agency, Washington admitted to consuming alcohol and then driving her vehicle. On February 20th, 2016, Ms. Washington waived her right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
All right. Is Ms. Washington here or her counsel? I see no one rising. I'll put the matter before the board. Council, on the board. Any discussion or a motion?
I'll move that we accept the recommendation.
Okay, Commissioner Gibson.
I'll second that.
We have a second by the mayor. Okay, we have a motion and a second to accept the one-year suspension. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is not on the agenda, but if I may address the council.
Okay. Director Stevenson has asked just to quickly address the council.
First of all, I want to thank my staff. These are difficult cases to investigate. A lot of times we know these individuals, they're our peers, and it's very, at times, very stressful to investigate these situations. So, and a few of these, the charge itself may not seem egregious, but there are, as you are aware, in different cases, there are intricate nuances. And there were a couple of cases where a different charge was, or an additional charge was recommended to Post, but through our investigative work, we were able to find out that that was not the case. So that independent investigation is vital. Second, I want to thank you for serving on the council and being willing to take on this difficult assignment. It's never popular to vote to take action on an officer's certification, so thank you for that. And third, earlier this week I was in D.C., DOJ and with the office, the COPS office, they invited directors, post directors to comment and make suggestions on the President's Commission on 21st Century Policing. I'm sure some of you have seen that report. It came out in May of last year. And I will tell you, I am thankful that I work in Utah. I'll tell you, the professionalism of our law enforcement community, you included as administrators that manage these areas and pockets of Utah, second to none. I hear about some of the issues that go on across this country, and Utah is, we are leading the charge when it comes to disciplinary. You have some states that don't even investigate officers for misconduct. And if they do, it has to be a felony conviction. So I appreciate the consistency that this council has shown, because I think that is very important when an officer comes before this body, knowing a good range of what they could be facing, instead of standing before you and not knowing what the verdict is gonna be. So I appreciate your professionalism and coming prepared, and have questions slung our way, maybe uncomfortable at times, but that's part of the process, and I invite that. So thank you, and let's keep making Utah the best state in the union. Thank you.
I'd second that also. And going across the nation with the National Sheriff's Association and looking at standards and conditions and expectations, we lead the way in many of these areas. And what we do is important to keep that public trust. So I appreciate your service also. Next meeting date, do we have that?
Usually the 1st of June. Okay. Are you going
to
be walking?
I'll be here in the wheelchair or walking, one of the two.
What does the week of June 6th look like? There's a body-worn camera symposium that's going on for 3 days. I don't know if any of you will be in attendance.
Some of us will.
Okay, then let's skip that week. That's the first 3 days of the week. What about the 13th? That week, any day on that week works. Maybe let's throw out the 15th.
What about the week before? Does that cause any?
Well, if we do the 9th, then no, that I mean the avoids week. The body camera.
I meant the week of, like,
post train the trainer for the below 100 on the 15th. I don't know if that affects you or not.
I was talking about May 30th through Friday the 3rd.
30th is Memorial. So
is that a problem? Are you talking May or are you talking?
Well, the first 4 days of June or the 1st through the 4th.
June 1?
The 2nd is fine.
2nd's good?
Good 2nd.
Either of those work for me.
June 2nd?
Yep, June 2nd.
At post?
At post.
Okay. June 2nd at post at 10 o'clock, I assume?
Yes.
All right. Last motion. Motion to dismiss.
So moved.
All right.
Moved.
2nd, 3rd, and 4th? We're dismissed. Thank you.
Drive safely.